On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Ava Orsmond, chatting all things life lessons.
People often say to me when they come to my clinics, and now especially when they come to the hotel, they are like, you know, Ava, you are not the persona you the TV have, you know, made you to be. And actually, sometimes I'm thinking, my God, that's terribly sad that there is that negative. There's some people who absolutely don't like me because what they saw on television.
As ever, it's available on all podcast platforms.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave, 1919, 1920. There's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you like the Indo Daily, you can follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on the Indo Daily, Jonathan Dowdle, his evidence, and the trial of Jerry the Monk Hutch. The Garda convoy sped through the Dublin streets yesterday morning. It was Tuesday the 13th of December and former Sinn Féin councillor Jonathan Dowdle was arriving for his second day of evidence in the trial of Jerry the Monk Hutch.
Without doubt, Jonathan Dowdle is the most high-profile state witness in gangland history because this is one of the biggest cases in gangland history. He's the state's equivalent of what is referred to in the Italian mafia trials as a pentito, as an informant who breaks the underworld's sacred code of omerta. So to those criminals he once associated with, he is now no better than a tout, a traitor, and they would perhaps call him dead man walking.
We're midweek into the extraordinary trial of Jerry Hutch, and this week is like no other before it, as Jonathan Dowdle tells all. I'm Siobhan Maguire, and joining me today is Paul Williams, the Irish Independent special correspondent who has been in the packed Court 17 of the Special Criminal Court all of this week. Paul, we've had 2 days of evidence from Jonathan Dowdle, starting with Monday. Can you tell us exactly what was said?
Well, what's been happening so far is that on Monday was the star witness has appeared, and that is the supergrass, Jonathan Dowdle. And his evidence has been broken so far into two. And one is that yesterday and for half of today, he was giving his direct evidence. These are his allegations. So none of this evidence was challenged or has been proven yet. And this afternoon, on Tuesday, Brendan Grehan, the defence, has started to cross-examine Jonathan Dowdle. It started just after lunch, and basically from the off, Mr. Grehan clearly stated his position and let us that Mr. Dowdle know on no uncertain terms where he's coming from. He says, Mr. Dowdle, I want to be clear from the very start. My position is that you lied to this court, and there are two big lies. One of the big lies is, which again is one of his central allegations, is that Jerry Hutch, the accused man, collected a hotel key card for the Regency Hotel, which was used by one of the assassins, flat cap Kevin Murray, in 2016, that he collected that key, that card, which had been booked and paid for by Jonathan Dowdle's father at the behest of Patsy Hutch, who is Jerry Hutch's brother. The other lie, he says, is that Jerry Hutch ever confessed to being involved in any way in the Regency Hotel attack. What we heard yesterday, to put that in context, is that he said that just after, a couple of days after the Regency Hotel attack, he got a call from Hutch and they met in a little park in Whitehall, himself and Jonathan Dowdle. He said he'd never seen Jerry Hutch in such a panic before. Anyone who knows Jerry Hutch is that he's an exceptionally cool character, and that he basically was very upset, and he allegedly admitted to Dowdle that he was one of the shooters, that he was very upset about the murder of the young fella, David Byrne. And he, basically what he said was, he told me it was them in the hotel. He told me it was him, as in Jerry Hutch, and them at the hotel. It wasn't what he said. It was how he was saying it. He said it was them at the hotel, and he said he wasn't happy about shooting the young lad, David Byrne, which is a devastating piece of an allegation, of course, and which, of course, hasn't been proved. He also alleges that Jerry Hutch met him before the attack and collected that key card. So he's very firmly put Jared Hutch right in the middle of all of this. The second part of his direct evidence concerns some of these famous tapes that we heard in the past few weeks, which went on for about 10 hours. And these are secretly recorded conversations planted on Garda eavesdropping devices that were planted in Dowdall's car and were recorded on the 7th of March. 2016, when Dowdall went for a second time with Hutch to Northern Ireland to try and convince the real IRA to become involved in trying to broker some kind of peace between themselves and the Kinahans, which of course time has told us that it wasn't very successful because something like 13 people died after this so-called intervention. And the deal was they were going to do a quid pro quo whereby he alleges again that the three yokes, which are being referred to quite a lot in the tapes, are three AK-47s, were used by three members of the hit team who stormed the Regency Hotel building and killed David Byrne. They were dressed as ERU men. That they were giving these three AK-47s, assault rifles, to the real IRA in Northern Ireland in return for their intervention. So that's where we were up to them.
And that's the thing, Paul. We've done previous podcasts on those particular recordings heard in the court case, which has gone on for like 30-odd days at this stage. And Yokes was repeatedly used during that conversation between Dowdall and Hutch in the car heading up to the north.
And of course, you have to remember as well that these conversations were crucial to all of these conversations did lead to the interception of those three weapons. And I remember the real IRA, Continuity IRA, or the new IRA, whichever IRA you want yourself. There are so many different IRAs now at this stage, that this guy was arrested, Shane Roan, bringing them back to Northern Ireland or bringing him up to Northern Ireland at the time. And it was these conversations that teed all of that up. And these were the weapons that were used. So what Dowdall is doing is attempting to basically connect directly Jerry Hutch with the weapons. One of the interesting things about this is Brendan Grehan is a very, very capable and very, very experienced senior counsel. And, you know, he's standing there and he's getting laughs out of the, audience, from the people, the public, the public have been queuing every day to get in. And in the way he's challenging Dowdall, and he is challenging him as robustly and as heavily as we assume that he would. And basically his whole line is that, you know, when Jonathan Dowdall, this is his argument on Tuesday afternoon, that when there is no proof against him, when there is no evidence against him, where there is no tape against him, recording his voice and recording him saying something incriminating, he doesn't know anything. So he's really going after, and he's going about it in a systemic, slow, gradual pace, which I think will continue for several days more. And the whole thing is that he's trying to discredit Jonathan Dowdall's evidence and his allegation, and basically portray him as a professional liar.
There's an awful lot of detail in all of this. And of course, during cross-examination yesterday on Tuesday, Paul, there were various things that came up, not least the issue concerning waterboarding and Alex Hurley. And Jonathan Dowdall actually served time for that particular issue. But he really was dragged over the coals now by Jerry Hutch's barrister yesterday, because he was trying to make the point, I guess, if you've lied once, you could potentially lie again.
And he did. And you know what? He really did, I think, land a few very serious blows on Jonathan Dowdall by bringing that up. He said, when did you learn how to waterboard people? You know, that was, you know, like, how does he explain? And you get this from Dowdall And we luckily we can have this kind of discussion because of the nature of the Special Criminal Court and this particular type of trial. But, you know, you very, very clearly see that Dowdall, you know, to the average casual observer there today, is that he's trying every chance he gets to justify himself, to explain away things. He says he was ashamed of it, but at the same time, he comes back with stuff like, well, he said this and he said that. He's actually also, by the way, exceptionally irritating witness to listen to, because he's got a really thick Dublin brogue, and I've absolutely no problem with Dublin brogue whatsoever. I love the Dublin accent, but he is very, very inarticulate. And you're straining to hear him, and the way he expresses himself can sometimes just be quite frustrating to try and listen to.
That's an interesting point, Paul. Give me a little bit of an idea, or paint the scene within the courtroom for us, because this is a jam-packed court, as you have pointed out. People really, really want to come in and see this, because it almost feels like it's something out of a Goodfellas or a mafia-style movie, that you have, you know, one of the biggest gangland trials going on right under our noses.
Well, I said in the Irish Independent the other day that, you know, this is the gangland trial of the century. And I think we in the Irish Independent coined that phrase. If we didn't, I apologise to whoever did, but I think we did. And I said it's not hyperbolic to describe it as such, because the attack on the Regent Hotel in February 2016 was the highest profile crime this country had ever witnessed since, and the last crime that shocked this country was the murder of our colleague Veronica Guerin in June of 1996, 20 years earlier. On top of that, it sparked the bloodiest feud that we have seen in the 50 years of the phenomenon of organised crime in this country, which is, again, a very, very, important and noteworthy fact. And Jonathan Dowdall is testifying against a man who is considered to be probably the most infamous, most enigmatic, most notorious, certainly the best known criminal figure in Ireland. So for all of those reasons, that's why we see such large queues. Like this week was incredible because of the, so far, because we've an Arctic, Baltic weather out there, and people, this massive queue of people. And at one stage the other morning, I didn't see this, but I saw it reported by some of our colleagues and some of the other newspapers that there had been almost like a bit, the guards had to push members of the public back so that the journalists could get in to start covering the thing. Like, you know, we were talking as well about other high profile trials, but this is the most high profile. Okay, I would say that because I'm a crime journalist all my life, but the only other two cases that come to mind that attracted so much public attention and so much interest, intense interest, was the Graham Dwyer trial and also the Mr. Moonlight case. But at the same time, this is in a league of its own. And it, because of all, for those reasons that you pointed out, Siobhan, it is an extraordinary case. Like you have Hutch sitting there, again, I always describe him as inscrutable, and I've been writing about him for a long, long time, 30 years, and he's sitting there looking very nonplussed with his head on his hands, but he actually moved, and his barrister, his senior counsel, Brendan Graham, informed the court of this, that he wanted to move so he could see Jonathan Dowdall. Now, Jonathan Dowdall, for his part, again, the Special Criminal Court, it's the same court structure as any other courtroom. He was brought in under amongst the phalanx of prison officers and specialist armed officers from the emergency response unit, and about seven of them. And he was brought through the side of the courtroom normally reserved for the jury, and it's the jury stand. And he is giving his evidence from the foreman of the jury, the chair that the foreman of the jury sits in. But he's sitting looking up. He looks very stressed. He's very, very red in the face. He's got big bags under his eyes. He doesn't look the youthful kind of face that you see from all the Sinn Féin publicity material, that they're the pictures that everyone's been using of him. He doesn't look as well as that. But he sits looking at the judges. He doesn't even look at the prosecution, the barrister, or certainly not the defence. And he's studiously avoiding Jerry Hutch. But Jerry Hutch is sitting with his head on his hands, just looking straight across at him. And he's staring at him. But he's not staring in a way that you can detect, because that's Jerry Hutch. He's, as I said, the word inscrutable always comes to mind to describe him. He's just looking there. And he smiles every now and again because it was one. There was a few funny interactions. Like, for example, there was part of the CCTV of the surveillance showed Dowdall and Hutch going to the north on the first occasion, and he's seen going with a bag into this house. And Graham said to him to see on Tuesday afternoon. He said, "You know, you went all the way up there. What was in the bag?" Kind of. He was basically implying that he was the guy who was moving AK-47s or guns or whatever. And he said, he actually just flippantly said, "Well, were you going to fix a light or something?" Because he's an electrician. And he said, "I did." He said, and like there was this moment when everybody was looking. I said, "Hang on a minute." He says, "You drove all the way from up to Donegal." This was he was at a meeting in Donegal, at a house in Donegal. "You drove all the way from Dublin with Mr. Hutch in the car to change a plug for somebody?" And he said, "No, I changed a socket on this house, a television socket, and it wasn't working right." And it was just one of those kind of moments where there was a bit of a giggle. And in an awful lot of ways, the best way to describe it, I was talking to our news editor the afternoon, and I said to him, "What's it like?" And I said, "It's, think of a cat playing with a mouse." And you get this as well, where Dowdall is going to great lengths to answer everything, but also great lengths to excuse himself, you know, to say, "I'm not the bad person you think I am." The only reason he says, by the way, he was involved in all of this is to try and save lives, that he was asked to help. He claims he didn't know anything before or after until Gerard Hutch confessed to him and all of that kind of stuff. So that's where we are at the moment.
And there was another interesting point from yesterday where Dowdall told the court that, you know, in his opinion, the Kinahans didn't start any feud.
That's correct. And, you know, and actually that would be, when you look back at the origins of this feud, they're actually right, perhaps. But one of the things he said was, and this is what he claims he was told, is that Kinahans accused Gary Hutch. This all centres around the murder of Gary Hutch back in 2015, Gerry Hutch's nephew, Patrick Hutch's son. And that they didn't trust him because they thought he was a tout, an informant. He then said he didn't realise that Patrick Hutch, Gary Hutch's brother, and Patrick Hutch Jr., he has stood trial in 2019 and his case was dropped. It collapsed in 2019. But what he's claiming in this is that Patrick Hutch went over to Spain and tried to shoot Daniel Kinahan at his home, which is well-known fact. But then in the end, instead they shot an innocent guy called Jamie Moore, who was a boxer, happened to be staying in Daniel Kinahan's house. And that as a result of that, they held him hostage. And then Patrick Hutch, back in Dublin, had to present himself in Drumcondra for a punishment shooting to be shot in the leg. This was part of a deal. €200,000 compensation. Patrick Hutch, who did the shooting, had to present himself voluntarily in Drumcondra and to be shot in punishment. He was brought there by a relative. Now, Dowdall went through all of this. So basically he's saying, and that is certainly the factual situation that we know of in this particular case and how it started. But he's sort of implying that, or he's saying that, you know, he thought it was an innocent family being wiped out. But what he's implying here now is that, well, you know, the Hutches may have themselves to blame as well. He's not saying that very openly, but that's the imputation.
So here we are now, Paul, Wednesday morning. Can we expect more from Dowdall today, or where do you think how will this play out for the rest of the week?
This is going to play out, you know, it could be very conceivable that the court is going to adjourn for Christmas next Wednesday. It's very conceivable that he could be in the box right up to Wednesday, because, you know, you could just see that, the reason that's not, you don't need to have a psychic ability is that, you know, a huge amount plays on this. Like Gerry Hutch's liberty, he's nearly 60 now. He's 60. And like his liberty is in the balance. So he is going, his lawyers are going to fight tooth and nail. And like so-called supergrass trials where you have a participating member of a gang. Remember, he was originally charged with murder. He did a deal with the state. and he has given evidence against. So the whole basis and the whole purpose of what's happening now is to completely and utterly discredit Jonathan Dowdall so that the court basically doesn't believe anything he says and that they will basically acquit Gerard Hutch. So that's why what's going to happen over this, this now is the most crucial part of this trial. And this is the ninth week of it, Siobhan. And this trial, I would predict when the court adjourns and comes back in January, that you will be seeing another few weeks, I'd say, anyway, of evidence. And then you would see the courts, the court perhaps retiring. You'd nearly be assumed that they will retire and probably go out for a couple of weeks before they come back with their verdict. Because anyone who has ever read a judgment from the Special Criminal Court, the most axiomatic, detailed documents you will ever read, they rationalise and study every minute detail and they reason through everything in a way that a jury would never do. And that's why there's so very, very few appeals. I don't know of any successful appeals from the Special Criminal Court in 20 years at least. The bottom line here is that this Christmas is going to be very lonely and very pensive and very stressful for two men. One in the Midlands in a prison cell, that's Jonathan Dowdall. This is his last Christmas. He will be in Ireland. The other one is Gerard Hutch, who's looking into the future and wondering what the future holds for him.
My thanks to Paul Williams, special correspondent at the Irish Independent, for joining me today. And you can follow even more coverage of this trial on independent.ie. I'm Siobhan Maguire, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced by myself, researched by Tabitha Monaghan, with sound by John Smith. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow, and leave us a review.